opinions on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome, one and all, to Cooking Like a Pro. You found Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista.
Hello, good evening.
All right, we are excited about talking about food. We are your North State show to go to. We have our podcast.
Yes,
and
whose release was specified.
Yep, we got, yeah, there's a background. That's all right. Hey, so anyway, you can find us here, KCNR. You found us, but 1460 AM and 96.5 FM if you want to give us a call. It's actually faster to type in a question to send it to cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Again, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. But you can call us at 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. And, you know, I don't know, when does spring start, you know?
March 20th.
March? Oh, it's coming up quick then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right before the kid's birthday.
Days are getting longer.
Well, yeah, the reason I was bringing that up is I know it's spring. Spring coming up. It's time to start getting ready to plant. Right?
Should have your seeds
started. Should be getting ready on that. And I always recommend starting with your herbs. I like to get, but your hardy herbs, you know, this, you know, your rosemary and your thyme. And of course, you always need to have a baylor tree or plant. They grow into a tree. Our baylor is taller than I am. Not that I'm real tall, but anyway, hey, herbs, just such a great way to flavor and season. And just think about that time of year, when you're able to add the freshness and that brightness to whatever it is you're cooking. You're always better off going with fresh. Fresh is just so much better than the dried, dehydrated ones. They're dehydrated, remember, it's about three times as strong.
Well, you have to reconstitute them too, usually. You've got to, you know, bloom them to bring them back to life a little bit.
Yeah. Once you put them in there, they're going to take a little while to cook. But you know, if you're making soup, something like that, throw them in there. But again, just remember they're going to be a lot stronger in flavor. Another thing I think about around this time of year, citrus. What about citrus is it's available year round. It comes from different parts of the world. But we were talking about citrus earlier and about different recipes that we can do. And one thing that I really appreciate about citrus, and we're going to mention it again in the third segment when we talk about pork and chicken, is it's a great topping. It's something you can make that's really, really simple to make, but it adds just such a level and a dimension of flavors. So it's very low fat, very healthy for you, and very flavorful.
It can brighten things because it's acidic.
Yeah.
And also, I think the lesser used part of the citrus is the zest.
Yeah. Well, zest is what you get out of the zest is the oil. And the oil in that, you'll notice if you see someone that has a martini or something with a twist, then they'll take a little piece of lime or lemon and they'll twist it. And if you look real close when you twist that, you'll see this spray of juice of oil that comes out and adds a lot of flavor to it. But on citrus, one of the things that I think is a challenge a lot of people don't really, they just don't do very often, and that's make segments, you know, out of your citrus to cut the, make sure you get the pith and then all the little, you know, the white pockets, you don't want those in there because they can be bitter. But, you know, the thing about it these days is you can buy everything already segmented. You know, you can buy your orange segments. You can buy your, grapefruit segments. Grapefruit's a great thing to add, not just a note of acid, but that sourness that you get, and it can cut through a lot of fat.
Also, with the sourness, you can counter that with salt. Salt will take care of bitterness.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking because we were talking off air about salmon, and that was just one of those things that salmon, because it has high fat content, can be what some people would describe as being fishy. It should be fishy. If it's fishy, there's something wrong with it. You know, when you get your fish, you want to make sure that you check it, you smell it, make sure that it smells good, and rinse it. I always rinse it with cold water. You don't want to pull any flavor out of it, but you do want to rinse any bacteria. Because remember, these fish, they do swim in water that has bacteria in it.
So because salmon is so fatty, that's where you're going to use like a lemon juice or even a lime juice, depending upon what direction you're going.
Yeah, high acid. And another thing is if you look at the fish, where the fish is connected to the actual skin, there's a gray area, and that's a bloodline. And if you cut, that adds probably more, I guess, like if you're going to say fishy flavor, that would be it. So, you know, you can always trim that out. Most people don't cook fish with the skin on anyway. I was watching something where they were seasoning fish and they were seasoning salmon, and they seasoned it on one side and they flipped it over and seasoned it on the other side, and the other side had skin on it. You know, if you put your seasoning on skin, flavor isn't going to make its way through the skin, especially not in a short period of time of cooking a, you know, 1-inch fillet of, you know, fin fish.
What else do you use your citrus segments on other than fish?
Well, I don't know. I think that, you know, any kind of a white meat it would work well with, you know, but then again, segments are great for, I mean, they'll brighten up anything you put them in. You can put them in any kind of a salad. You know, even if you wanted to just go with something like mandarin oranges, you know, something that's already canned, you know, it just adds a different flavor. It has a natural sweetness. I think if I'm, you know, if I'm getting fruit in the can, you want to get fruit that doesn't have sugar added to it. So again, look at the label. We always talk about that, looking at the label.
But also be careful if it says no sugar added. Make sure that they haven't added a fake sweetener, because that will completely give an off taste to any canned citrus.
Yeah, that's one thing that's pretty easy to pick up if you're looking for it, is that off flavor that you get from some of these sweeteners that are out there. It's almost always at the very end. And it's always, generally for me, it's always towards the back of my throat. Mm-hmm. And that's where I taste that. You know, kind of that off flavor. So sometimes I guess I would describe it kind of almost chemical, like, you know, in some way.
It tastes like the pink packet.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I wanted to mention, since we're not really on a topic here and we're bouncing all over the place, what were those little chocolate treats that you made? Those were delicious.
I took what was in the cabinet. I had some Skippy peanut butter, and then I ran and grabbed a really dark chocolate bar. Actually, it was Hershey's Special Dark. And I melted it in the microwave, melted the chocolate bar in just a Pyrex cup. Then I had the little mini, little paper cups like you would use a muffin cup.
Yeah, muffin.
But they're the little ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then I poured the chocolate in there, let it cool just a little bit till it wasn't runny, put in a little dab of peanut butter, poured a little bit more of the chocolate over the top to seal it in, and immediately pressed in some roasted salted peanuts.
Well, you know, one thing I was thinking about, maybe a little bit of that Celtic salt on there.
A little bit of sea salt. I could add that, but since it was a roasted salted peanut, I didn't want to go too far until we tested them and see how it came out.
Yeah, well, it came out great. And I think, you know, sometimes it just takes a little ingenuity. You look around and see what's the counter. I know, in fact, I've seen that they came out with a peanut butter that has chocolate in it now.
Yes, and I picked some up. It is
GIF.
Yes.
Was it hiding? I didn't see it.
It's in the cabinet.
Okay.
Just haven't popped it open yet.
It's not in the Frankie Heck cupboard, so just set aside just for you, is it?
No, it's not hiding. It's right next to the other peanut butter.
Well, I'm excited about trying that. I guess I would probably, I don't know if it'd make a very good sandwich, but man, it sure should. Sounds good.
We'll give it a shot. We'll see what it tastes like.
Pick up some celery on the way home. But anyway, yeah, so, you know, just have a little, you know, creativity and I guess, you know, I don't know.
Back to citrus.
Yeah.
Lime. The lesser, I think, used citrus, well, especially in America. I think lime is more popular down in Central America,
yeah, maybe
Mexico.
Maybe in some of the Asian countries, and perhaps. But the thing about lime is the lime is really more sour. You know, you can get some sweetness out of, you know, out of lemon. You can definitely get sweetness out of oranges. But if you're using lime, then you're definitely going in the direction for something that's going to be sour.
Well, lime definitely goes well with tequila.
Tequila, yeah.
So if you're going to make a tequila lime marinated chicken, how would you do that?
Well, probably wouldn't be able to do it in the 30 seconds we have left before the break here. But I actually have a great recipe for a tequila lime sauce. It kind of breaks my rule, though, because I try to keep you know, my list of ingredients down to like four or five, so it doesn't get too complicated. This one, I think it's got 15, 16 different ingredients in it, so we'll have to talk about that one. It is a great sauce, so. But anyway, we'll be coming back in just a moment. We'll take a break. I appreciate you being here at Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be back in just a moment.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
They cause sleepless nights for millions of Americans. Don't be one of them. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, get protected today. Call 800-242-3186. Coast One Tax Group, protecting your bank, home, and your sleep since 2008. With hundreds of five-star reviews and an A-plus on the Better Business Bureau. Call Coast One Tax Group, 800-242-3186. Stanley from New York owed $93,000. The IRS placed a levy on his bank account. Coast One released the levy and settled with the IRS for $2,000. Mark in Michigan owed $225,000. After Coast One stepped in, Mark walked away paying less than $1,500. Call Coast One now. A 10-minute call can save you up to 93% on your back taxes. Get your fresh start today. That's 800-242-3186.
Sponsored by Coast One Financial Group.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-785-9132. That's 800-785-9132. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-785-9132.
Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef, and we are moving right along. Again, appreciate you being here at KCNR. Either if you found us on 1460A or M96.5 FM. But anyway, hey, you know, I was going through the store the other day, and I was looking at the shelves, and I was looking at the salad dressings, and the one that always stuck out to me, maybe more so because we just watched that movie, was it The Hustle, The Hustler, with Paul Newman?
Oh, the,
Yeah, it was an older movie.
What did you call it?
Anyway, great, great movie, though. Yeah. But anyway.
The Sting.
The Sting, yeah, The Sting. He has just a wonderful variety of not just salad dressings, but also pasta sauces. And the thing I love about it, now he's passed on since, but is that 100% of the profits go to kids' foundations. And since they started, over $6 million alone has gone into kids' foundations. So that was just a very, very great philanthropic, you know, endeavor that Paul Newman did. So think about that next time you're looking at salad dressings. The benefits are going to the kids, but you know, one of the things when I think about salad dressings, that really pops my mind, because mostly it's obviously in the title, it says salad, but it works as a great marinade, especially in oil vinaigrette. If you don't want to make your own, oil vinegar dressing probably has a shelf life of a couple of months or so, maybe more, I don't know, but you know, look at the bottle, but you know, have some on hand in your fridge, use it as a condiment, but the one thing about a marinade is you want whatever it is that you're marinating, you want that to to really absorb the marinade. And you do that by breaking down the connective tissue. So you get yourself a mallet and with some little dimples on it and just kind of bring, maybe break the skin of the chicken breast or pound out the pork. And then when you marinate it, it's going to suck that marinade in much better, much better.
Well, speaking of the tequila lime vinaigrette, if you don't want to do the big long list one from scratch that you make, one we used to make was just to take our house vinaigrette and add some tequila and some lime to that. Just a simple upgrade.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. We just talked about using it as a dressing and a marinade. But yeah, you can, you know, anything that you have, that you can modify to fit your, you know, the flavor profile that you're going for. You know, try to think about the protein that it's going to be paired with and how that might, you know, work. You know, are these flavors going to be fighting one another? Another thing is you don't want, you know, the money that you're paying when you, whether you're cooking at home or you're going out to eat, is for the protein. And so you want to taste the protein. You know, if you're eating, you know, fish and chips, for example, and all you taste is tartar sauce, well then, you know, it's kind of defeats the purpose of, because what you're paying for is the fish. I mean, it's no different than putting, you know, something overpowering on ketchup on a filet or something like that, or ketchup with any meat. Like ketchup with probably anything.
So what do you want to marinate? Chicken breast? Because it's dry, right?
Yeah. Anything that I want to infuse with some flavor. I mean, you know, anything that's out there. I mean, normally I'm not going to I don't marinate cuts of beef very often, but, you know, seafood, pork, chicken, those all take a good marinade. You know, of course, salmon is, or any kind of fin fish, halibut, cod, are all going to be fish that will absorb marinades really, really well. And sometimes you may not even want to use that and just use that as a basting agent. But make sure that you don't do this. So you want to make sure that if you marinate something in whatever that marinade is and you take it out and you cook it, don't use that marinade anymore to baste it or as a sauce or anything, because it's been contaminated by the protein that's in there, which was raw at that point. So we marinate it, but then you want to take a little, or we make a marinade and set a little aside and, you know, put a little brush in there and brush it while it's on the char grill or in the pan. It's always nice. I mean, what do the French do? They put a pat of butter on top of everything.
So take a little bit out. So make it a little bit larger batch. Take a little bit out to reserve it so you can use that later, but then you have the bulk of it that you use to do the marinade.
Yeah, maybe only a couple of tablespoons. I mean, you don't need much, you know, to baste it is basically what you're doing.
How long do you marinate things? Overnight? A couple hours?
It's going to depend on how fast it's going to soak up that marinade. Again, seafood, it's very, you know, the muscle fibers are very, very light or loose. It's going to soak up a marinade really quickly. You know, chicken and pork, you might want to marinate it for an hour or so, put it in maybe a bag or put it in a, you know, in a glass dish and let it sit for a while. I wouldn't go overnight because the problem is you have a, remember your acid, ingredients are enzymes, and those enzymes are going to eat through things. So if you allow something to marinate for too long, you're really going to get a mushy product. It's kind of like if you've ever had pokey, like, you know, raw tuna, and they put it in a marinade, and it's been in the marinade for too long.
And it just gets kind of squishy.
And it just kind of falls apart. Because remember, that's what acid does. It eats through things. You know, so.
Well, think about salad. You put dressing on a salad, and within an hour, your lettuce is limp.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and one thing about that, I don't think we've mentioned is that when you're, try to match, you know, the product, the item to what you're putting it on. I mean, you wouldn't put blue cheese dressing on, you know, butter lettuce or something really, really, you know, soft and fragile. You know, you'd use something like an iceberg. That's why they use it for like a wedge, you know, wedge salad traditionally has blue cheese, bacon, tomato, that goes with it, so it can handle a mayonnaise-based, you know, dressing. So you want to match it up. If you're doing a light spinach salad, then maybe, you know, a nice light dressing. You know, you're doing a heavier salad with romaine, then you can use a heavier dressing. Let's say you're using romaine and you're making a Caesar salad. Well, Caesar dressing is a creamy dressing. The lettuce can hold up to it because the lettuce is firmer.
Well, and just like proteins, if you're talking about chicken and beef, you want a – what do you want to do with a stronger meat that is tougher? So, like, we used to always do London broil for barbecue. We always marinated it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you want a really acidic marinade to help break that down because it's more tough, has more connective tissue.
Yeah, you can break it down. That's one of the things that does what we call tenderizing. You know, a lot of times you can tenderize with these dressings that have a lot of, a high amount of acid in it. That's one of the things that they work great for. So, we're going to take another break here at the bottom of the hour, Cooking Like a Pro on KCNR. You found us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
I know, Sid and...
The National Wild Turkey Federation 26th Annual Reading Chapter Hunting Heritage Banquet is Saturday, March 1st at the Senior Citizen Center at 2290 Benton Drive in Reading. Doors open at 4:30 p.m. and dinner will be served at 6:30. Tickets and sponsorship tables are available by calling 530-526-8350 or get your tickets online at nwtf.org/events.
Happy New Year, Reading, from your friends at Black Bear Diner, reminding you that if you're looking for more food, more fun, and more family, this is the place to be. You can count on a warm atmosphere and deliciously fresh home-style food. It's the perfect spot for every generation, with something for everyone. Come for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Black Bear Diner.
Hello, Reading. Join Commune Dance Company, a professional contemporary dance ensemble for Precipice, a dance performance, on March 8th and 9th at Shasta College Theater. This moving dance production explores the precipices of life, the moments of change, uncertainty, courage, and hope. Come support the performing arts in Reading and be inspired by captivating dance and storytelling on March 8th at 7 p.m. and March 9th at 2 p.m. Get your tickets today by searching Commune Dance Company Precipice on Google, and it will take you right to our Eventbrite link.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Hey, thank you for your call.
Welcome back. You have found us Cooking Like a Pro and our website. Culinarily Yours. There's all kinds of stuff you can get there. You can go check that out. But we'd like to welcome you back and also just take a moment to personally thank Charlou and Kathy and the whole Charlou's family down at Charlou's Tap House for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast. Charlou's located in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, just about 8 minutes south of town. One of the very few family-run restaurants left in the area. And they're, remember, they're open 7 days a week, serving lunch and dinner, delicious homemade pizza. They got pastas on there. They got sandwiches on there. They got great crisp salads on there. And they're also making a creamy, authentic Italian gelato. Got a great big gelato machine back there. I've been there and tried it right out of the hopper. And also don't forget to enjoy the incredible, unique beer wall, offering up a great variety of frosty ales, IPAs, creamy porters. They got usually one or two crisp ciders on there. And sign up for their rewards program. They have a great rewards program. You can actually get your rewards instantly at Charlou's. And if you need any more information, go to charlous.com. And also don't forget their adventure room. You got a birthday coming up? head out to their adventure room because they have a great room full of toys and things for people to bounce around.
Bouncy houses and arcade. And, yeah, all kinds of things.
Yep, lots of things to do to keep your little tots happy for the birthday. Let's see. We were talking about compotes earlier. I wanted to mention that because there was some confusion between a compote and a chutney. Now, they're pretty much about the same thing, and what they basically, if you think about it, it's almost like, well, like a jelly doesn't have any chunks in it where a jam does. Kind of think of it along that line. So it's chunky pieces of fruit. We actually do a really fun one with apples, which goes great with pork. We're going to talk about pork and chicken, and it goes great with both of them. But the thing that you add to it is usually just a little bit of acid. Always, it just helps kind of brighten it up. But you can take your apples and saute them up in some butter until they get nice and tender. Also, a little bit of diced onion works great in there. And then really, it's just sugar, water, and then whatever your spices are. When I think of apples, I think of cinnamon, nutmeg, kind of those warm winter flavors.
Now, this is for a chutney.
Yeah, this is for a compote.
Compote.
Yeah. But again, well, it could be a chutney, too, because remember, they're both basically the same thing, except a compote is served warm. Where chutney is served either cool or cold. So it just kind of depends on what you're going on, what you're using it. I mean, for example, you take this same apple compote and you want to put it on a nice, thin, fresh baked pork sandwich. Well, then you would serve it cool. It would fall into the category of chutney, and chutneys almost always have a little more acid in it. So there's a little more of a tang or twang to it. Where a compote served warm, let's say you did, you know, like pork chops and applesauce kind of a thing. But instead of using applesauce, you just use this kind of warm, you know, apple sauteed, you know, walnuts. And you could just kind of think about those earthy flavors that would go well with it.
So they have more of a texture than applesauce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no. Well, than applesauce, yes. But that's why I'm just saying it as a, you know, an alternative to go on there instead of using applesauce. You know, you can go with something that's a little more chunky, a little more exciting, certainly a lot more flavor. I mean,
okay, so you don't have
any, little one-dimensional.
You don't have any applesauce in the cabinet, and you brought home pork chops, and you want to have some apples with them. So you would grab an apple out of your...
Off your tree
or of your fruit bowl. You've got some apples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you peel them? Yes or no?
Core it and peel it.
Okay.
Yes, the peelings, it's, well, especially if what... You get, they wax a lot of these fruits now, so you want to peel it anyway. But if you're going to cook it, you definitely want to peel it.
Yeah, any type, specific type of apple or just
a cooking apple? Yeah,
I
go with a cooking apple. Cooking apples are things like Granny Smith is a cooking apple. A lot of your Washington apples are as well. If it says crisp in the name, then it's more of just an eating apple. The best apple I like as far as just a raw eating apple is the Fuji. Yeah, Fujis are just... one of those things that it's kind of my go-to.
Kind of crossover. You can go any way you want to go.
Yeah, kind of middle of the road. But, because, you know, a Granny Smith apple is not going to be as sweet. It's going to have a little more sourness to it. It's going to hold up better in the cooking.
So it's not going to break down as much.
Exactly. And so you have this nice chunky, you know, warm compote, this warm apple mixture. And again, with, you know, if you add some walnuts or, you know, your winter spices and seasonings, go ahead and add those to it as well. You can add a little bit of honey, add a little bit of sweetness, take away some of that sour, just a touch of salt to bring those flavors out.
Now, if you're going to add onions, do you add them toward the beginning with the apples as they're cooking?
Yeah, I would add them at the beginning because you want to cook the onions. Yeah, you don't want the onions raw unless it says raw. I can't really think too many times I use it. I mean, maybe on a burger or something like that, and I don't know, and spinach salads, you know, you use like raw red onion, but kind of thin. One thing about red onions or Bermuda onions, what we call them, they can be, you know, they're generally a sweeter onion, but the older they are, the stronger they get, the more pungent they get. So I usually just stick with the yellow. White onions are going to be stronger, generally speaking, depending on how they were treated, but in time of year they're picked. But for the most part, your white onions are going to be your stronger onions, your red onions are going to be your sweeter, and your yellow's right smack in the middle.
And what about adding a little bit of shallot to your apples?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're kind of, if you mention all these onions, you're kind of going with the cream of seven onion soup. You know, I remember making that. And that's actually on our website.
That one is on the website.
We have a video on that, a YouTube video or something. You can go, yes, just Google.
Or just go to culinaryyours.net. It is on the website.
Okay. That's a cream of seven onion soup.
Just search up onion soup. You will find it.
And it pops up, and it's a great soup. And it's not really strong onions, even though there's seven different onions in there, or, you know, items from the onion family, things like your leeks and your scallions, your green onions, your garlic, things that come from that family. But no, it's just a great cream soup. You boil all those things down in a nice stock, add a little roux, a little flour and butter mixture to thicken it up.
Now, how can you make an apple soup? Could you do an apple, like a chilled apple soup in the summer with the spring coming up?
Yeah, you know, you could do anything. I mean, you could do a chilled apple soup, certainly. When you say apple, though, the first thing I think of is mulligatawny. So mulligatawny is just a very unique soup that you really don't see. I was introduced to it decades ago. But it's a soup, but it's an apple curry soup.
Ooh.
And it's really, really good. You know, it's got your mirepoix in there, minus your carrots. So it's got your celery, onion, and your leek. And it's the higher flavor profile ingredients in there are apple and curry. And a lot of times people will put chicken in it as well. You kind of see it. I don't know if its roots come from like an Indian culture, like from India or something like that. But it seems like that kind of an item.
Well, now I used to make an apple curry sauce to go with chicken. I would cut up the apples and add some curry seasoning and, you know, let it simmer, let the chicken simmer in that.
Cook down, put a little water, a little broth in there, a little vegetable stock or something, and allow it to kind of cook down so it has a little bit of moisture to it, you know, and then also you have all that moisture that's coming out of an apple. I mean, I'm not going to Google this because, you know, not everything in the internet's accurate, but I would say an apple's got to be 70% water, maybe more. I mean, lettuce is, what, 97% water. So you figure when you're cooking these fruits and vegetables, most of that liquid is that juice that's coming out of what you're cooking. So you cook it slow enough so it doesn't evaporate out. That would be one thing to consider. Sometimes when you want to keep that flavor locked in, you can put a lid on it. That helps keep that some additional flavor from, you know, escaping. You know,
so cooked apples go perfect with...
Pork's generally the one thing. And also when you go into the store and you're getting pork, some people get confused, but there's a pork, what we call a pork loin and a pork tenderloin. The pork loin is on the top of the animal. The tenderloin is like by the bone. So if I took a cow and I cut that loin, I would have a loin on one side, which is what we call a strip loin. We cut it into steaks. We have New York steaks. And on the other side of that T-shaped bone, I have the fillet, which is more protected because it's closer to the backbone of the animal. It's right on it. And because of that, you know, it's a riding muscle. It doesn't do much but hang on to the skeletal structure.
So
that's going to be more tender.
Equivalent to a filet mignon on a cow.
It would be a pork tenderloin.
Pork tenderloin.
Not a pork loin.
Okay, so pork tenderloin, it would be your choice steak. Off of a pork.
The tenderloin would be, yes, and it's going to cook much faster. It's much more tender. You want a dry cooking method. You know, you want to barbecue it. You want to saute it. You want to broil it. You definitely don't want to take it. And I mean, you're paying more money for it because it's a tenderloin. So you might as well, you know, take advantage of that and not ruin it by turning it into soup or chili verde or something like, you know, that you're cutting. Because you can use an inexpensive cut of meat if you're going to use the cooking process to actually break down the connective tissue and make the tender.
All right. So I want pork chops.
Okay.
I go to the deli counter.
Okay. Uh-huh.
What am I looking for? Because I see these thin cut things, and then I see these big old country style ones, and I see some with big old bone on them. What am I looking for, and how do I make a decision?
Well, a lot of that comes down to whether you like a bone or not. If you like the bone, I think that I like bones on the meat, on the protein, because they to me it locks in more flavor. There's less places for stuff to escape. And plus, you know, I mean, pork chop bones, you know, grandma used to give them to us to chew on when we were teething, you know, when we were real small. But I like picking up a pork chop bone and kind of chewing the meat off of that. But it is going to take longer to cook the meat that's next to the bone. So make sure you check the internal temperature of pork. You want it, you know, 155, 156 and rising, because you want it to get to 160. And, you know, and again, if you get one without the bone, they still, it's what's, I guess, you know, the challenge or the criticism, I guess, that I have is that they'll call it a pork chop and it doesn't have a bone. And to me, if it says pork chop, it should have a bone. I don't know if that's old fashioned, but sometimes they'll take the loin and I would call it a loin chop before I would call it a pork chop, because it doesn't have the bone.
I think they just, everything seems to think that steak refers to beef and chops refers to pork.
Yeah.
That's just kind of the way I think.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that, because, you know, you don't have a ribeye steak that has a bone in it and call it a ribeye chop. You know, I guess maybe you could have, but, you don't normally hear that. But, you know, pork goes great, with just about, I mean, when we're talking about the loins, again, we're talking about those dry cooking methods. So they, you know, if you're going to barbecue something, again, that apple compote would be a great, great addition to it. And then also remember, you always want to remember that you want a complete meal, right? A complete meal means that you got a protein, and then you also have a couple of other things that go with that, right?
Usually potatoes is what, yeah, I lean towards, like a scallop potato.
Or starch, yeah. And then the last thing is the vegetable. So you got your pork chop with your apple compote. What are you going to do for a side on that?
Like I said, I usually do a scallop potato.
You know the first thing I think of?
I don't.
Yeah. Oh, sure you do. I think of a nice polenta. Nice, like a blue cheese polenta.
Which we just posted on our podcast a couple weeks ago. Yeah, we posted
that one. Oh, it's salmon.
And it is actually up on the website. The recipe is on the website.
Oh, yeah. Go to culinarilyyours.net. Yeah, and you can search that. You can pop in Chef Cow. Eventually, you'll get there. Culinarily Yours will get you there fastest. But, yeah, because when I think of pork, I do think of something softer. I don't think of, you know, an appropriate starch wouldn't, like, be a baked potato. That'd be something to use for beef, you know. Probably wouldn't use a grain, because a grain would be something I'd generally use for seafood. You know, if I had a nice grilled salmon dish, then maybe I would go with couscous, you know, or polenta or some other type of grain, maybe a wheat berry, or, you know, some of these grains can be a little stronger. So you want to make sure that you balance those. If you're using wheat berry, then maybe it's also mixed in with a pilaf of rice with some vegetables or something. And then as far as a vegetable, when I think of pork chop and if I had a nice couscous or polenta on the side, I think of something kind of soft like a cream spinach. You know, to me, something that would, I think something like that would go well. Peas, of course. You know, I don't really think of root vegetables. But I do think of, you know, again, what's in season. And I've always been a steamed spinach guy. I, you know, come from years of watching Popeye. You know, I don't even think they have Popeye anymore.
Not anymore.
People probably don't even know what I'm talking about when I say Popeye. Popeye and saute with, you know, with some olive oil. Or what was her name?
Olive oil.
Was it olive oil?
Yeah. Oh. Or olive.
Olive.
Back to the pork chops one more time.
Sure.
Especially the thicker cut pork chops. Because sometimes you get the little skinny ones. They're like half inch. Then you get these big old thick country pork chops. Now, something you taught me was to sear it first.
Mm-hmm.
Season it, sear it first, and then finish it in the oven.
Yeah, season first. You're right. Don't forget. And then get a nice sear on it in a pan. And then, you know, I would sear it in a pan that can go in the oven. You don't want something that has a handle that would melt. You know, so sear it and pop it straight in the oven.
So carbon steel, cast iron.
Yeah.
Have your oven heated up. Your pan is heating up on the stovetop as you're searing it. So that's ready to go. Then just go straight in to finish until you get to 155 and rising.
Yeah, and I'd probably even deglaze it a little bit, you know, depending on what, you know, maybe some marsala or I mean, it could be water. Could be, depending on what you're going to, the final product's going to be. I mean, you could use orange juice. You know, if you're going to use an apple topping, like we've been talking about, an apple compote, or if it's cool, an apple chutney, maybe you deglaze it with apple juice, you know, because you're just getting more flavor into it. You know, if you got an apple type pork dish, then how many places can you put apple into it?
And then how would you take care of these, the little skinny guys, the little skinny pork chops?
Season them and just real quick. Those are like breakfast steaks, right? Pork, I like a little pork chop for breakfast.
So I would not finish those out in the oven because they're just going to go so quick.
Oh, yeah. Those are the little ones they got. I mean, you know, again, you can't.
I think they call them like medallions or something like that.
Yeah. Well, usually a medallion, for me, when I have a medallion, it means that it's been pounded out. But yeah, they're cut real thin. They call it a, you know, kind of like an scallop, and kind of like a scallopini, where you cut beef filet really thin and make a beef scallopini. The same idea as like with a veal scallopini. Those are items that are generally can be pounded out.
And would you ever pound out a pork?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If it was thick and you know, what am I going to do with it? How am I going to cook it? You know, I mean, do we want dinner in, you know, 45 minutes because we're leaving to go somewhere, or is it something I can slow roast and develop more flavor?
So, okay. So last thing real quick, if you wanted to do a pork cutlet and you wanted to have it breaded, how would you do that?
Yeah, flour, egg, and panko. Yeah, flour, egg, panko. Hit it in a nice hot pan. Make sure the pan's hot so you get, remember, you don't want it to soak in the oil. You want that nice crisp, you know, finish on it. Flip it over. And again, you're talking about something that's probably a quarter inch thick. It's, by the time it's browned on both sides, it's done. You know, and anytime you see the juice coming out of something, then you know that it's reached medium as well. So always a good trick to know. So we'll be back in just a moment with our final segment here, Cooking Like a Pro. Again, Chef Cal, Mrs. Chef Krista, back in just a moment.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Well, I'll tell you, maybe that'll work.
Back. Cooking Like a Pro. All right. Well, we appreciate you tuning in and listening to us for all the segments here. You know, it's always nice when you sometimes get questions from people as well. It gives us something else to chat about, because we do want to make sure that this show is interesting to use. We just kind of pretty much come up with food and things related to food. And I know we were talking earlier about a recipe that I did with a halibut dish. Now, we've talked about this particular dish before, but it was cooking with puff pastry.
Back on episode 6 of the podcast.
Boy, that's good if you can remember that. What would be like episode 35 now or something?
20. Yeah, we're getting around 30, somewhere around 30.
Oh. So if you've ever heard of a dish called beef Wellington, it's very popular. That has kind of a puff paste. Well, I would say that's more of a pie dough. Remember, pie dough, the difference between your pie dough and your puff pastry is your puff pastry is folded over many more times with butter. And when you fold it over, it gets real flaky. That's what causes, as that butter cooks and vaporizes, it rises up and you get all those little nooks and crannies and flakes and layers, I guess be the best term. But it's, you know.
So puff pastry is kind of the cousin to a croissant.
Yes. Yeah. They would use. I don't even know that I'd say they were cousins. I'd say it's the same thing. If you took puff pastry and just cut it in a triangle, rolled it up, and put a little twist on it, make a little upside down smile.
It would puff into a croissant.
Yeah, you've got a croissant. Now, traditional croissants, from the French standpoint, you know, they may add more butter and have more layers. So maybe it's the same dough, but it's folded over more times. And remember, when you take dough and you put a layer of butter on it and you fold it over, every time you fold that, it just, you know, it's two layers and it's four layers of butter, then it's eight, then it's 16, then it's 32. And so you just get more and more layers. Now on pie dough, you don't have that at all.
No.
Yeah. Pie dough, you don't have that. So there are certain things that you'd use, pie dough. Like if I was making a chicken pot pie, I'd use pie dough versus, a puff pastry. Cause it's more sturdy. Yeah, it's not as nearly as delicate as something like a puff pastry. It's kind of like if you're doing a tart, you'd use a pie dough, any kind of a tart, whether it's sweet or whether it's a savory tart. We used to do a blue cheese and fig tart with balsamic. You know, that was more of an appetizer dish than you really wouldn't have something quite that, with a flavor profile. You know, quite that high for something like dessert, because it has a lot of acid in it and sourness.
So you go to the refrigerator section at the store.
Yes.
And you can either get puff pastry.
Uh-huh.
Usually like Pepperidge Farm or something instead of that. Or you can get a pie dough, like a fold out pre-made pie dough.
Yeah, you can get any dough you want.
Now, how you can, so you can use those in savory applications. I mean, usually you consider those for sweet applications, but we're talking savory dinner mm-hmm. type applications.
Yes.
Wrapping things with it.
Yeah, and also don't forget phyllo. You know, phyllo is one that goes great. I've wrapped all kinds of product in phyllo. Remember, anytime you're cooking a protein, a seafood, whatever it is, a bacon filet mignon, turning it into a Wellington, you're enclosing all of that flavor. There's no place for that flavor to escape to. So because you're doing that, you're going to have a dish, a final product that's going to have more flavor. So wrapping it in phyllo dough. Phyllo, we used to do phyllo-wrapped salmon was one of the dishes we had on the menu. But my favorite dish for phyllo is baklava. You just can't go wrong with it, of course. It's dessert, and it's overly sweet. It's a Greek dessert. Actually, they have it in more places than just Greece. You can, you know, find it readily available in Italy and probably other places as well, maybe Spain. But it's just layers of phyllo that have been buttered. You lay those out, and then you take a mixture of chopped almonds, brown sugar, a little bit of spice, cinnamon, clove, allspice, that kind of a thing. And you grind up those almonds until they're, let's say, chopped really fine in a Cuisinart. Put a layer of those on your buttered phyllo. Put another piece of phyllo on top, another layer, another piece of phyllo. And you want about five layers. And you want about 3 to 4 layers of phyllo for each layer. Then you, when you get done and prepared, ready to cook, go ahead and take a fork. I use what's called an ice shaver. It's what I use when I make ice carvings for decades. And you just poke a bunch of holes in the top of this pastry before you cook it through the phyllo, and then you pour the whole thing, pour caramel sauce over it. And you bake that off. Or you can bake it off first and then put the caramel afterwards. But either way, it's just solid sugar. I mean, it puts you in a diet, puts you in a sugar coma.
So you have all these different pastries. Okay, so
yes.
Again, we've had pie dough. We've had
puff pastry.
And phyllo. Now, if you take those and wrap something, so usually you'll see those as a pie crust or an underlining something.
Mm-hmm.
But to put it over the top, en croûte, C-R-O-U-T-E, that's, you're basically creating a crust above an item, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Well, look at a brie. You know, brie cheese is something you see baked, you know, wrapped in phyllo all the time. You know, I mean, you could do it in puff pastry. I don't think I'd do it in pie dough. I think that'd be a little too dense. But brie cheese is something that you see, you know, almost at every dinner party that's serving hors d'oeuvres.
So brie en croûte, do you just put the pastry on top of it, or do you fully wrap it?
You fully wrap it. Fully wrap it, and I cook it on parchment paper. You know, get a little bit of layer in between there to help it, you know, the bottom brown and not, you know, get a nice color to it. And you can put a little garnish on there. You can do any variety of things. But, and then something like that, you'd probably go back to, remember we were talking about chutneys and compotes in the last segment, but maybe take out the apples and put in, you know, berries, you know, whether it's fruit, blueberries, any kind of a, you know, cranberries, any kind of a berry, because that's going to add that sweetness to it. And you've already got the brie, which is giving you all the creaminess, and then you've got the pastry. The problem is cheese coats your palate. That's why the cheese is served after dinner in a lot of countries. In Britain, in France, they'll serve a cheese course after all the other courses because cheese coats your tongue. So if you serve cheese and you don't serve something with a high acid in it, to counterbalance that creaminess, you're really kind of wasting a lot of your taste buds because they're covered and they're not going to be able to taste everything because they're coated with the dairy.
And it seems like all the en croûte that I was looking at, you've got the brie en croûte, salmon en croûte came up a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
The beef Wellington is an en croûte, but they all have a layer of either a mushroom duck cell, mm-hmm. a spinach mousseline, onions, things like that. Is that true that there's usually a layer of something kind of...
Some kind of flavor. Some
fruits
kind of
or vegetable?
For two reasons. You want some kind of a flavor additive in there, so you're correct on that. The second thing is you want to get the pastry a little higher than the actual protein itself, because the protein is moist. and you want the pastry to cook. So, for example, one of the recipes in the cookbook that I'm working on is a halibut en croûte. And it does have what you mentioned, that mushroom duxel. So it's just chopped mushrooms cooked down almost to a paste. They can be a little chunky. They coat this paste on top of the halibut, of the fillet of the fish, and then wrap that in puff pastry. And that mushroom duxel will keep that pastry up and will allow it to brown and to crisp up, where if it was just wrapped on the fish, it would get soggy.
And that's where beef Wellington, the crust isn't straight on the beef.
No, you use your spinach, and then they use a mushroom duxel on beef Wellington as well.
How do you wrap a beef Wellington to get it completely covered?
Plastic wrap.
And get it really pressured?
What I would do is you take and make a wrap out of it. So let's say you're making a mushroom duxel. You chop all these mushrooms, you saute them, you season them, you add a little bit of cream, and you turn this into a paste. Then you take a piece of plastic and lay it out on the counter. And then you spread this duxel over it real evenly, and then you put a piece of plastic on top of it, and then you can press it out with your hand, you can roll it out with a rolling pin, but you have this nice thin layer of whatever the size is. Let's say maybe it's 10 inches by 12 inches across by just, you know, an eighth of an inch thick of this. Basically, think of it as like a mushroom-flavored pliable cardboard thickness kind of a thing.
Now, do you put the pastry down first on the plastic?
And right now you want to wrap. You want to prepare the duxel to wrap around the beef.
Okay.
Right? And again, sometimes I'll do spinach also. But then you wrap the mushrooms around. So it's in this pliable plate or layer of mushrooms. You season and sear your meat off. So you get some of those juices out of there that might get soggy. Lay it out on your mushroom duxel and take the top piece of plastic off, of course, and then use that plastic to roll it. So now you've got this beef encased with this nice layer of mushrooms. And then your pastry goes on top of that. And the same thing, same manner of preparation. Lay out your pastry, set your beef with your mushroom wrapping on it on top of your pastry, roll that around, seal it on the bottom, and bake it off until you get to your degree. You need to practice on that one because of the temperature of the oven. You want the thing about beef Wellington is you want this beautiful flaky pastry, but you want the beef cooked where you want it.
That's why you don't want it overcooked. That's the right doneness for both of them.
You practice. That's when you have to practice. And I'd say, probably, it depends because, that fillet, how thick is it? You know, the tenderloin towards the tail part is 2 inches, all the way down to an inch, and the other side goes from 3 inches up to 4. So it depends on where you're at, but whatever beef that you're using, trim that until it's the same diameter all the way across.
So it's a cylinder.
Yeah, so it's a cylinder shape, and then you're going to wrap that with this mushroom duxel, which you've laid out, allowed to cool, so it's really pliable, almost like paper. You know, you're wrapping it around, and then once that's done, refrigerate it. I'd refrigerate it each time, and then pull out your pastry, set it on your pastry, and then roll it up in that pastry. Go ahead and seal it. You can put a garnish on top, brush it with, a variety of things, butter. You can brush it with milk, whatever you would normally brush a pie top with, and then roast that off. And again, the goal is to get that beautiful brown, crispy texture on the outside and just that perfectly cooked fillet on the inside, which is normally going to be right around medium, 135 degrees.
So before going on to fillet or doing the fillet, start with brie. Start with brie cheese. Practice wrapping that.
Practice wrapping brie cheese. Yeah.
And breaking that first.
Yeah. But the Wellington, again, I would say that in a 450 degree oven, you want it to be a higher temp because you need a higher temp in order to be able to brown and cook the pastry. But you want a lot of heat in there to be able to make sure that the meat is cooking inside. So, again, it's something I'd probably practice. As long as the meat is the same trim, as long as the mushroom duxel is the same thickness, as long as the pastry is also the same thickness and it's rolled up nice and tight, shouldn't have any trouble.
Now, for our vegetarian friends, can you do a vegetable en croûte?
I don't know what you'd wrap. As far as what you'd want to put inside of it,
like a roasted. Let's say you want to do like some roasted carrots potatoes
roast some root vegetables and turn those into some sort of a of a mush kind of a thing. Let that cool off. I put some binding agent in there, probably some eggs or something, maybe some panade or some breadcrumbs. Roll, you know, get that in. You need to be a pliable mixture, and then set that on there, and then just go through the same process. So, anyway, hey, yeah, if you want a vegetarian Wellington, give it a shot and give me a call and let me know how it turned out. But we do appreciate you, as always, listening to the podcast, and you can find us on, Apple?
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Apple. YouTube, but if you can't find any of those, just go to culinarilyyours.net, and all roads lead to where you want to go.
Yeah, and we got a lot of great stuff on there. There's a barbecue pamphlet. There's also I love the grocery list. Pull off the grocery list. But anyway, great information. There's also our vegetable booklet, which you can purchase on there as well. So we appreciate you tuning in, and be sure to come back next week for Cooking Like a Pro. We appreciate you listening, and don't forget to have a wonderful day out there, and just try to be intentional about your kindness out there. And let's take the word random out of the phrase random acts of kindness. So God bless you and yours, and have a wonderful evening, and thanks for tuning in to Cooking Like a Pro.
From Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.